And I think that also helps the mental health of attorneys who are billing on the billable hour and feel stressed. They have to bill so many hours in order to keep their business afloat or in order to get their bonus or in order to whatever the, you know, the aspect of it is. And the great thing about the subscription model is it doesn't have to replace the billable hour, right? You can, as an attorney, set up the own way for it to work and adapt to your current firm model and just get that monthly recurring revenue from clients.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. I hope you're having a lovely day. I certainly am. I got shot out at a cannon this morning, got up and got at my desk about 6:30 and just rocking and rolling. I've got a full day of stuff going on. Of course, I'm going to take some breaks, going to do my walks, going to make sure I'm not stressing out or get my back stressed out. But this is what you have to do. You have to organize your day and you have to knock it out of the ballpark. And so part of that day today is doing a podcast. And guess what? I've got a tremendous guest for you all today. It's on a topic that we really haven't covered at all on the show. And so I'm going to introduce my new friend, and hopefully we're going to hang out together in Deerfield because he just moved here from the city of Chicago. And I live in Deerfield, Illinois, if you ever want to hunt me down and I'll take you for lunch or something like that. But he's an attorney at Conn & Cook. His name is Matthew Kerbis, and we're going to call him Kerbis. How's it going, Kerbis?
Steve, it's going great. I'm so glad to be here today. Thanks for inviting me.
It's like, I got all this energy and then you come in with like a super chill, like radio voice on me. And I'm like, you're throwing off my game.
Well, I am the occasional guest host and the host of a sub segment on a young lawyer podcast called Young Lawyer Rising. So it is sort of my, it's my zone.
This is your zone. This is where you come from. All right. Well, do me a favor in my audience in particular, and give a little background on you, on yourself and your, and you also have a lot of time invested in working with the ABA. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that, and then we can get into the meat and potatoes.
Absolutely. So I am mostly in private practice, insurance defense work at Conn & Cook. Conn & Cook's a firm in Chicago. It's been a mainstay. It's been around for over 40 years. That's most of what I spend my day doing, first party, third party. So defending against personal injury actions, defending against claims and lawsuits filed against insurance companies. A lot of what I do is related to fraud investigation. It doesn't always happen, but we do have quite a number of cases where, like, say somebody burns their house down for the insurance money kind of a thing. I'm not talking about any specific cases here, but what Conn & Cook, what we're really known for, we've made a name for ourselves, is for the fraud investigation, and that can get really interesting.
Yeah.
When I was in law school, I went to DePaul in Chicago, and I got really involved in the American Bar Association. I was even elected to be chair of the law student division, of the ABA. So I represented essentially all law students at all ABA accredited institutions across the US. And I got to lobby on issues that mattered to them, to the American Bar Association, to the section of legal education on accreditation issues. My administration started a 3-year fight to eliminate the pay credit barrier for externships. So it used to be law students could only get pay or credit at an externship or a field placement program. Now they could get both. And then I also got a chance to lobby US Congress in that position as well on behalf of the whole profession, along with a lot of lawyers. It's called a thing called ABA Day. And it's really a lot of fun. We've been virtual the last two times, but it's been a boatload of fun. And then I went on to continue work in various positions throughout my many years since then. That was year two in the ABA for me. And I actually just finished up year 9 serving in continuous leadership roles, terming out just this month as the liaison to the section of legal education for young lawyers. So while it's a non-voting position, I've still been very active in legal education related advocacy work in the American Bar Association. Among many other things, like the podcast I mentioned, is also a young lawyers division team that I'm on. So, well, it's been great fun, and I've really been able to build out my network across the US, which has come in handy when I've had clients who have, you know, say I have a client who wants to buy a house in Florida. Well, I reach out to the Florida attorney who I know really well in the ABA to get a referral, kind of a thing. So it's been really useful in that regard.
And you know, engaging with a lot of young lawyers as you do and have, what are you seeing? Like, what's their mindset coming into the legal profession? Are they understanding the value of marketing and business development and growth? Are they in the dark about that? Is it something that they're just trying to find a job? What's kind of their mindset these days?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of tunnel vision on, holy crap, I have all the student debt and now all of a sudden I need to pay for it. Like, law school was like a fun ride. I didn't really have to think about it at the time. And for most, not all, but for most law students, you know, they're coming in right from college. They don't know. I didn't know, you know, what I was getting myself into with the student loan debt. I just figured, like a lot of young lawyers and law students do, you know, we're the go-getters. That's why we go to law school. You know, we were like, oh, well, we'll be in the top percent of our class and we'll get those high paying jobs. But simply the reality is, and when I talk to students in high school or college who are thinking about going to law school, I try to make them face this reality right away. And this, most of you won't end up in those jobs. And so you get tunnel vision when you graduate and you're like, I got to get the highest paying job I could get. Even if I wanted to go into public service, even if I wanted to do other things, even if I want to make a huge difference, that's why I went to law school. Now I have six figures of student loan debt. I just need to get a job that I could make the most money to pay that off, right? And they don't really super understand their finances when they get out, which is why that segment I host is the Financial Wellness Minute, sort of on a mission to help educate, you know, young lawyers on what they could do with their finances. But it's all about really what it comes down to is making that money. And they know and they think that business generation is really important, but they don't really get it in the beginning. And that's another thing that I'll talk to prospective law students about is every relationship that you make right now, when you're in high school, I go and speak at my alma mater, Stevenson High School in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And I say, if you're mean to anyone right now, go and apologize, because you never know. They could bring you a lot of business in the future.
Yeah.
If you want to go into the legal profession, every relationship you have is super important. So it's sort of related to the wanting to make as much money to pay off the student loan debt as far as, you know, business generation. But the stark reality is, at least in my experience working with young lawyers across the country, it's just, it's a skill set that's seriously lacking.
Yeah. And I'll just put this out there that I'm talking with a lot of law schools and a lot of professors at law schools, and they're seeing kids coming out of law school totally unprepared for the real world. One of them said, you know, some of their kids had never even written a check and they're starting a solo practice and trying to figure out like how to run a business. It's like, holy mackerel. So just to ease some of their minds, I mean, there's lots of resources to learn business development, marketing, practice management, time management. You just have to look for those resources. Now, I could be a resource and I have a lot of contacts like yourself and others that could be a good resource, but just don't do it alone. Don't suffer in silence and don't think that you have to go at it alone. There's a lot of different places you can go to get information and help and advice, whether you're starting off as a solo or you're going into a law firm making a lot of money. But you know, you realize at some point, or hopefully you're as early as possible, that business generation is a learned skill. And it's something that people can get, whether it's from me or from others. And that's a new part of being a lawyer that needs to be considered more now than ever, because the world is changing, which we're going to talk about. That's a good segue, actually. You know, how the world is changing, how legal is changing. And we can't just keep thinking that things are going to be the same, or that we can just keep billing hours and that the world is going to be okay. Right. Is that kind of the right mindset?
Yeah, it's spot on. And I'm lucky that I'm in a firm where, as an associate at my firm, I'm not required to bring in business as an insurance defense firm that we've been, you know, we've been in business for over 40 years. We've been representing a lot of the same big insurance companies, you know, for a long, long time. So it's more business maintenance than it is business development. At the same time, I'm still bringing in business, because the reality is if you're able to bring in business, then you can, you know, make more money because you get a commission on that business that you bring in, even if it's not required, right? And not every firm is set up that way, but at least I've been at firms where I do get a cut of what I bring in. So I have these student loans. I now have I just moved, so I have a mortgage now. I have a kid, right? So I'm incentivized to, in addition to doing my work, is to bring in business because I get that cut. And I come from a long line of salespeople. My dad's in sales. My mom's in sales. My Bubby was in sales. You know, she was like working as a real estate broker, like back before a lot of women were doing that. So I sort of grew up with that sales aspect, but a lot of attorneys want to go to, you know, law school and practice law, and they don't think that they have to go out and sell themselves. And yeah, I guess if you're in house, you know, maybe like you're working for that client, but the reality is that the sky's the limit. If you're an attorney, if you're a private practice attorney, I mean, no, you know, comfort level of, you know, going in house or, you know, working for the government or doing something like that. Like, and don't get me wrong, if you want to do that and that's your thing, that's great. But truly, as a private practice attorney, the earning potential, the sky's the limit. But there's an access to justice problem, which is something that I've talked a lot about in my work in the ABA and work to solve. And I think one of the ways to do that is with the subscription model applied to law. And I think that's what that's the transition you wanted to make. Sorry, it was a long walk to get there.
No, it was exactly, you know, it was right on. But before we even get to the subscription model, which I want to mention, I mean, as a lawyer, yes, you can make more money if you bring in business and you get a commission on that, or you get what's called origination credit. Okay. And I think that's a part of it. But when I talk to attorneys every day, kind of all day, all week, that are looking for, and it's rarely about the money. What resonates with lawyers more than the money in paying off that debt, which is important, is the control that comes with having your own clients, the control that if your firm gets bought, if your firm slows down, if one of the big insurance carriers leaves, or they start a procurement department that's going to really nickel and dime, which might lead to your subscription model point anyway, that when you have your own client base, when you have your own GCs, your own CEOs, your own insurance claims people, they're yours. You own that relationship. And if you leave or if something else happens, you can control your destiny. That's really more of what people are hiring me for or looking for business development, is that they don't want to take any kind of risk as it relates to their future. And that happens when you're just getting fed work, because the world is changing. And I mean, even like price pressures, right? I mean, insurance defense has one of the toughest, right? Aren't like, you know, rate pressures, that's constantly happening, right?
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into it. And as far as like the rates and all that for insurance companies, but what I will say about it is, you know, and there are also smaller players in the space. You know, we also represent, you know, smaller insurance companies, not just the big giant ones,
sure,
right? And there's a little bit more attempts at sort of creative pricing, maybe with some of the smaller carriers than there are with some of the larger ones. And I am working on a formula that I think can work with the subscription plus flat fee for the insurance, defense type practice. But that is in its early stages. And really, I think you'd have to get buy-in first from the insurance companies before you even got buy-in from the law firms to do that kind of a thing. But definitely there's always, that's always something to consider, right? It's a high volume practice, insurance defense. So the rates are going to be different than say, doing sort of probate or wills and trust type work for people at the billable hour. So it's definitely, you're onto something.
Okay.
I'm not going to totally pull the curtain back today on your show.
No. But we can get into some of it, right? I mean, you mentioned the subscription model, you tried to segue and I blocked you, and now let's get back to it. So the billable hour, 200 an hour, 300, 500, 700, 1100 an hour. I mean, they're all over the place. And there are companies and people and whatever that are paying all different rates for all different kinds of attorneys and law firms. And so for some businesses, that's going to, you know, that's the way things have been. You're talking about a subscription model, which is a fairly new concept, I think, unless you tell me otherwise. And to explain what that is, subscription versus the billable.
We all know what a subscription model is now, outside of law, right? We pay for Netflix, we pay for Hulu, you know, we pay for Amazon Prime, right? We pay for all these things.
Keep going. There's at least five more that I know I'm paying for right now wasn't. Even, I think I might even have Apple, which is like, what is that? There might be one good show a year. Oh my God.
Right? iCloud, you're paying, you know, these monthly fees, right? There's so many subscriptions, right?
Yeah.
And so as consumers now, we're actually very used to paying for subscription fees for different types of things. And even as a small business owner or startups, and I'm growing my practice representing startups as clients, you know, they are launching you know, businesses that based on the subscription. But in order to launch their business based on the subscription, they're paying, you know, $6 a month for Google Workspace for professional email, right? Like they're paying like all these fees, you know, monthly to launch a business. So whether we're business owners, whether we're individual consumers, we're all so very used to paying the subscription model, but law has not really adopted it yet. Now there are maybe a couple dozen attorneys that I've discovered that are using the subscription model, but none of them are using it the way that I want to use it and are using it the way that I think more lawyers can use it. And that is to have entry-level prices that compete with your what you're paying for Netflix, what you're paying for Amazon Prime, and really be just an entryway into people using you as an attorney, being able to call you, whatever that looks like. And there's different ways to structure a subscription model. But I think there needs to be even just an access level of, okay, if I pay, you know, less than $50 a month, I get access to an attorney to ask them questions, to maybe shoot them a quick email, look over this one page document that before I sign it, at least so I know what I'm getting myself into, and an actual negotiation and actual drafting and actual all these other things on top of that. Well, that you could pay a higher subscription amount per month, or you can do a flat fee billing. So subscription plus flat fee. And I think that also helps the mental health of attorneys who are billing on the billable hour and feel stressed. They have to bill so many hours in order to keep their business afloat, or in order to get their bonus, or in order to whatever the aspect of it is. And the great thing about the subscription model is it doesn't have to replace the billable hour, right? You can, as an attorney, set up the own way for it to work and adapt to your current firm model and just get that monthly recurring revenue from clients. And when we graduate from law school, and it all ties back to that for me, because I was so involved and engaged in the ABA that so much of my perspective is gained from that experience. Like, there was an ABA president, James Silkenet, when I was chair of the law student division. He said, he was a partner at a big firm. I think it was Sullivan Cromwell. He's like, I can't afford to hire me. Right. And that sort of dawned on me, like this partner at a big firm who's probably raking it in, you know, he couldn't afford to hire himself. You know, there's something broken with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we graduate, and I don't know, maybe, you know, you've heard these stories that, you know, you work with so many lawyers, but when you graduate from law school, all of a sudden, even when you're in law school, your family, your friends, all of a sudden they start reaching out for you for legal advice. And you're like, whoa, hold on. You know, first of all, if you're in law school, you know, I don't have my license yet. You know, and second of all, if I am licensed, you're not a client. You know, I have ethical responsibilities that I have to fulfill. You know, so if you want to hire me, I could give you legal advice. You know, maybe I could give you legal information and I can't actually tell you what to do, but I could save you some Google searches. But if you have a subscription model, an affordable entry, you know, access, you graduate from law school with a base of potential subscribers right there. And that won't be enough to, you know, to survive on, which is where the business development, I think, comes in, which is something new, because, yeah, sure, you can get your friends and family to maybe pay you $20 a month, $50 a month, you know, to be able to actually get, you know, some legal advice, you know, and then that's where bar associations come in, because they don't teach how to practice law in law school. They don't teach how to run a business. They don't teach how to generate business in law school, which is a whole other podcast episode. But that's where bar associations come in for CLEs and to learn and to know, you know, so you're not, you know, so you're meeting your ethical obligations in terms of legal advice, you know, to client, you know, clients that sign up for the subscription model right when you graduate. But there's a blue ocean of people out there that can't afford legal services, that have never used legal services before. And now, with the subscription model, which I hope gets rapid adoption, these are people who they couldn't afford an attorney before. How, you know, there's a question of how do you market to them? How do you get them to sign up for a subscription model, which is something brand new? Now, they're used to signing up for subscriptions, but not for lawyers. And it's a service. Like, it's not like you're getting a product like this, these TV shows you could watch. You know, you're signing up for a service. So I think there's a lot of questions that I have in my crusade to get the subscription model adopted. Okay, so let's say attorneys buy in. How do you get the potential clients to buy in? Because I see this as an access to justice thing. I see this as a everyday people, you know, signing up. You know, what if they don't use you for a month? Do they unsubscribe? What, you know, what incentives can you build in to make them stay subscribed to you if they're not using your services every single month? So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered.
The biggest question I have is, for a lot of attorneys listening to this, they would say, well, how is this even, you know, yes, it might give people access to justice, and there's some level of honor in making law affordable, but everybody's got bills. Everybody wants to make bank and do well in their career. How does this work financially and profitably for lawyers listening to this that say, wait a second, this sounds like I'm giving the farm away or giving away thing time that I don't really have.
There are 24 hours in a day. And if you work on the billable hour, you can only bill 24 hours a day. And if you bill more, guess what? They're going to find out and you're going to get censured or potentially lose your law license. And there are some great stories about that. You can't do double billing. You know, you're on a train and you're billing, you know, because you're traveling. So you're billing for travel, but then maybe you could also work on some other things, you know? So I billed, you know, for 2 hours. And maybe if you were to do a lot of that, you'd end up billing over 24 hours a day. Well, guess what? That's super unethical. You could lose your law license, right? So there are only so many hours a day. So how do you scale with the billable hour? You scale by hiring more lawyers. That's all you could do for the billable hour. That's all you could do is hire more lawyers to bill more hours because there's only so many hours in a day. With a subscription model, you could scale like never before. And there's a great book I'm going to plug here, which I've listened to on Audible. It's called Subscribed by Tien Zhou. And he is the founder of a company called Zora. And this is, you know, maybe we can get him to sponsor this segment.
There we go. Yeah, I'll have to reach out.
not a sponsored plug, but it's a really incredible book. And I highly recommend that you listen to it. Anyone listen to it or read it. I listened to it on Audible. There's a great accompanying PDF on Audible. And really, he breaks down the subscription model, why it's useful. And of course, Zora is a platform that helps companies, you know, implement the subscription model. They're the company behind the Salesforce subscription. He was one of the first people at Salesforce. So I actually got to meet him in this pandemic world on like a Zoom event type thing. That's how I even learned about him in the first place. I was already on the subscription mission, but that book does the best job that I've come across to really sell someone on the subscription model. So if I said, you know, do you have, you know, some time, read this book, listen to this book.
Let me say this though. Let's assume that 9 out of 10 or 19 out of 20 people will never read that book. What's the Reader's Digest version in a few sentences? The biggest takeaway you got from the book that you could share that you were like, wow, that really hit home for me.
Yeah. So it all comes down to scale. And that is that the billable hour incentivizes inefficiency, right? Why would I use this e-discovery software when I could, you know, hire a bunch of associates, you know, or contract attorneys and just do, you know, bill review work and just build the heck out of the file, right? So with the subscription model, where you're not billing by the hour, there's incentives right there because you're charging less to create as many efficiencies as possible, which means utilizing all the technology available, which, you know, spoiler alert, is probably you're going to have to pay a subscription to get access to that. Even things like like there are free versions. Like, so if I'm a solo practitioner, maybe I just need the free version of Calendly. You know, I don't need the paid version, right? But if I'm if my practice grows, well, then it makes sense for me to, to pay whatever that small amount is so that I could do more advanced things on the calendar, right?
Sure.
For people to you know, pick a time to talk to me or whatever. So, so there's a lot of free tools out there. So some of this is, again, I think this is why I'm going to be launching this project soon, because I'm not as active as a member of the ABA anymore right now. I just lost an election and I sort of termed out of my other position. So I'm going to spend that time doing something else. I think bar associations could be a great place where you could go and you could learn about this technology. Like the Law Practice Division that hosts the ABA Tech Show every year in Chicago is sort of a great resource to learn about technology in the law, but that's also so focused on law. There's a lot of great technology out there that is not being adopted by the legal profession, which I think could help you create more efficiencies in your practice where you could scale like never before. You could productize law. So you could use actual document automation. You could use forms. You can make it so that the technology does the heavy lifting and you just do the law and the advising as an attorney. And so you could take on more clients than ever before because you're not billing by the hour. So it becomes a volume practice. But at the same time, people who didn't have access to an attorney or legal services before now can get access to that. Even if it's not the traditional, I'm going to spend as much time on your file. I understand there's some pushback from I call them the old guard in the profession, about that sort of mentality of what a lawyer is. But what a lawyer is needs to change because, hey, guess what? LegalZoom is now going to open up their version of a law firm in Arizona. And so companies are coming in and productizing legal services where clients out there, prospective clients in this blue ocean of people who could use legal services but can't afford them at the billable hour model, they're never going to hire an attorney if other companies come in and productize legal services. So attorneys need to do that. This is really a let's save the profession kind of a mission.
This is happening, in the next 3 to 5 years that the ownership of law firms by non-lawyers, the continued marketing and advertising in Google, use of Google, the pressures of procurement departments and rate pressures, it's all working against the billable hour. And you're coming up with something to try to save the profession by altering and being forward thinking and how this, what the future is really going to look like and how lawyers are going to be better able to compete. Is that a good summation?
Yeah, it's excellent. And, you know, there's a lot more that we could say about this, and maybe, you know, in a few weeks or a few months, we will.
Might be a second show, right?
There might be maybe a recurring show every so many months.
Okay.
To see where we're at. So this project that I alluded to earlier is called Law Subscribed. And that's past tense subscribed. And this, hopefully this winter, I'll finally have the website launched, lawsubscribed.com. It's at lawsubscribed on all the socials. I'm going to be interviewing attorneys with subscription models, the two dozen out there that have them. I'm going to try to get them, you know, to talk to me about it. And I mean, this is all, you know, like, this is like a weekend project for me, right? Like, it's like a journalistic endeavor. And I really hope that it inspires, you know, a lot of attorneys out there to launch a subscription model.
I mean, and just to tell you, I'm working with 30 lawyers at any given time throughout the year. And right now I can tell you, I have three that are on a subscription model, that are working a subscription model. And it may not be the same way that you're describing it, because it isn't really scaling. They have limitations to how many they can take on still, and they still are going to have to hire associates and expand. But it's more of a flat fee subscription model than something that provides, you know, where they can do 10 times as much work and stuff like that. So maybe it's a little different than what you're saying, but I'm interested in staying involved and in touch with you on this specific topic, because I think people need to hear the direction that the legal industry is going and how it's changing, because if they're sleeping at the wheel, it's not going to be good. And it's just, the next 5 years are going to be so different than the last 5 years. We've got to be prepared for that.
And I think you're, and this is the last thing I'll say, and I think you're going to see previously disadvantaged groups who are lawyers really succeeding in this regard. And of the two dozen or so attorneys who I know with the subscription model, several of them are minorities, women of color. And because the current model, the current law firm model, doesn't work for them. Just like in Malcolm Gladwell's book Outliers, the importance of being Jewish chapter or something, I might be butchering that name, where, you know, the Jewish attorneys were shunned at the big firms, and so they opened up their other practice areas that were, you know, things that the old guard didn't want to practice. And then all of a sudden those practice areas became really important, and now, like, Jewish lawyer is a thing, and I am one. But
yeah,
you know, not like that regard. But I think you're going to see the currently disadvantaged groups in the legal profession latch onto something new and novel like the subscription model to provide access to legal services to groups that look like them, that are definitely not getting access to legal services now. And you're going to see them have incredible success as attorneys. And then the old guard will be saying, oh shoot, you know, we missed out on that. But I think that's good, hopefully, for everyone, and then everyone else will follow suit.
Yeah. And I want to be a part of that world and part of that change as it happens. But listen, man, thank you so much. Let's move to the three best of. And I know before you move to my hood, Deerfield, Illinois, you're a Chicago guy. So let's go through and let's pretend that you're still in Chicago. Since you're so new to my area, you're not going to have the same insights that I'll have. But I've already sent you an email with a bunch of ideas of places to see and eat, yes, and all that. So let's talk about Chicago. What's your favorite restaurant in the whole city of Chicago? The place that you could pick one place to go eat, it'd be this place.
Unfortunately, it's closed, and that was Green River in Streeterville.
Oh
boy, that was something. That and then they opened that chef ended up opening a new restaurant, and then ended up leaving it, unfortunately. But it, since that restaurant, your listeners can't actually go to if they're in Chicago, I got to go with one of the classic deep dish Chicago pizza places. And for me, that's Giordano's.
Giordano's. Okay. Now there's a whole thing between Giordano's, Gino's East, and Lou Malnati's. And you're saying Giordano's. That's it.
You want a softer crust. You want more of like a pizza pot pie with like a pureed, you know, sauce, super ooey gooey cheesy. Oh,
yeah.
Excellent. That's my, and I like all of them, but for me, for my taste, ooh, Giordano's all the way.
Okay. And then people that are visiting Chicago, there's obviously a ton of things to do. What would you say you have, if you're coming to Chicago, you have to do this one thing?
As a visitor. Yeah. Especially, even if wherever you're from, I think Lake Michigan is an incredible gem of a thing that we have, that Chicago is right on. So I'd say lake walk or a lake bike ride.
Yeah.
Something where you could really like ride up and down, you know, Lake Michigan for miles and just see how incredible of a resource, and a beauty that we have in Chicago. I think that you got to do some sort of lake walk or lake bike ride for sure.
Yep. Okay. And then people that are in Chicago, what are they into these days? What are they doing that seems to be a hot thing right now?
Social justice.
Social justice. You know, okay.
I work in an office in the Loop, and even just the other day, I was hearing, you know, someone on like a megaphone or something. And with what happened to George Floyd, really, you saw an incredible social justice movement in Chicago. And while it slowed down a little bit because of, you know, the Delta variant and other aspects of the pandemic and people getting back to work and everything, I still see a lot of momentum in terms of social justice in Chicago. And so I'm really proud of, you know, being in a city. And even though I'm not living in the city now, I do still work there, but I'm really proud to be in a city that cares so much about social justice issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're very, you know, progressive compared to many areas of the country. And that is something that is definitely a standout in Chicago. I agree with that. So listen, Curvis, thanks so much for being on the show, for sharing your wisdom, for giving us insights about not only yourself and your background, but also the subscription model, the forward thinkingness that you're having about what the future is for lawyers. And I think it's right in line with a lot of the things that I'm trying to help lawyers with, which is to, you know, really consider the future, consider that you can't just keep doing things the old way and expecting that things are going to be okay. They're not. And you might be okay right now, but you know, a year from now, the world can be a very different place, right?
Right, Steve. And thank you so much. And I look forward to talking to you again about this.
Yeah. And we're going to have to take some walk in Deerfield or I'll have to take you out for some of the Deerfield fair, try different pizza, things like that. Anyway, listen, thanks again. And hey, everybody, thank you for being, being a listener of the show. And, you know, I appreciate that you spend 30 minutes with me once or twice a week. And again, the goal is to help you be that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. And, you know, consider that, it's important to think about the future and where things are headed. And hopefully this show is just a part of it. If you think that we're being helpful, like us, give us some good ratings, write a nice review right there on your Apple phone as you're listening. Just take a second and click a button, and hopefully more lawyers will get to hear the show and enjoy it like you do. Take care, be safe, be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.